Good evening. I'm Rick Cottom. Welcome to Your Maryland. In 1906, a great earthquake rocked San Francisco. A different sort of quake also shook the world of books, and behind it was a determined young man from Baltimore. Upton Sinclair was the son of a Virginia couple who had moved to the city after the Civil War. His mother had, or pretended to have, links to the Virginia aristocracy. His father drank too much. In 1888, 10 years after Upton was born, the family moved to New York and a succession of apartments and boarding houses, each less desirable than the last. Upton attended public schools, but though he was short, slightly built, and inclined to study, the tough Irish and Italian kids in his neighborhood never seemed to bother him. What affected him more were the times his family returned to Baltimore to visit his mother's sister, who had married John Randolph Bland, the richest man in the city. Their townhouse and country estate resembled something straight out of the Great Gatsby. The difference in circumstances was not lost on young Upton. At 15, he became the youngest freshman at the City College of New York, and at 18, entered Columbia University, intent upon studying law. He soon gave that up to spend a summer in a cabin in the Canadian woods, writing the great American novel. He met a girl instead, got married, and had a son. When his novel failed, he decided to write another, this one about the Civil War and the great theme of slavery. To research it and save money, he built a cabin in the woods near Princeton University so he could use the archives there. That winter was the coldest in years. His wife nearly committed suicide, and the finished novel didn't sell well. But that failure gave birth to an idea. Looking around him, Sinclair saw that the old antebellum racial slavery had taken on a new form. Now it was economic. In the years since the war, the rich had gotten very rich indeed, until they controlled everything. The poor worked, languished, and died in unrelieved misery. Social mobility had died too. Class warfare was imminent. Sinclair watched closely when in 1904 workers in the Chicago stockyards struck against the so-called Beef Trust and were quickly crushed. He wrote a letter on their behalf and sent it to a Midwestern socialist newspaper, The Appeal to Reason, whose publisher then asked him if he'd like to write a book about American wage slavery. That was it. In November 1904, Sinclair packed his bags and headed west, having read everything he could get his hands on about the meatpacking business. He spent the next 6 weeks walking through the plants themselves, disguised in working man's clothes, carrying a lunch bucket, and seeing things no one except those condemned to work there were ever meant to see. The result was a shocking book entitled The Jungle. Sinclair described in sickening detail how diseased pigs and cattle made their way to the American table, and how American soldiers in Cuba had died from eating beef treated with formaldehyde. Readers gasped when he explained how packers used every part of the pig except the squeal in making sausage. He told how, occasionally, men blinded by steam fell into the rendering vats. When they were fished out, there was never enough of them left to be worth exhibiting, he wrote. Sometimes they would be overlooked for days, till all but the bones of them had gone out to the world as Durham's pure leaf lard. Reaction was immediate. On reading the book, President Theodore Roosevelt launched an attack on the Beef Trust. The Philip D. Armour Company, Sinclair's thinly disguised target, tried to bribe him with a sum equal to about $6 million in today's dollars. Armour's lawyers tried to co-opt his publisher, who angrily replied by giving the rights to European publishers. Soon all the world was in an uproar. The slight, scholarly boy from Baltimore had written the book of his young life. Yet once again he had failed. Upton Sinclair had wanted people to see the plight of the American worker, but it soon became obvious that what his readers cared far more about was their food.
Come on, you good time people, while I have money to spend. Tomorrow might be Monday, and I neither have a dollar nor a friend. When I